Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. After being away for 2 weeks, I am anxious to be back and excited to be back on the show, and I want to thank everyone for their congratulatory messages for the wedding of my son Brad to his lovely bride, and now my daughter-in-law, Angela. And I also want to thank my co-host, Stan Friedman, for the last 2 weeks going solo on the show with two great shows with Mike Rosman of Bowfly and Ron Feldman of Fran Data. Stan, thank you for handling this very, very excellent. I mean, I listened to the shows. They were both excellent.
Well, thank you, Paul, and glad you're back. And nobody's happier that you're back than I am because... Until it's time to do the show alone and not only sit here and banter and talk back and forth with you, but then manage the dashboard and worry about the sound and is the guest going to be here on time and all the things backstage that you have to do are usually you having to do them. So for the past 2 weeks, I got a little taste of what goes on backstage and further prep for the show. And Paul, I personally am thrilled to have you back.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Well, it was fun. It was a fun experience. Two great guests and two guys that have had so many years of experience from places that we don't delve into every day so much on the finance side, but great personalities as well, and really fun to dive a little deeper into conversations with Ron and Mike. And from different perspectives, while they share a lot in common in that they're both in the financial world, their approach to what they do in franchising is pretty unique and different. And I learned a lot from people that I've known for a number of years. And when you get into an interview environment, you kind of learn a little bit more. So I hope that they had as much fun being with us on Franchise Today as I had talking with them. And I hope that the audience got a couple of nuggets out of each of those shows that they can carry into their business as they build for sustainable growth.
Yeah, and I'm seeing both shows are trending higher than normal on on-demand listens on iTunes. So they were both very much important topics that kind of just, you know, overlap each other and very important to people in all different walks of life in franchising. So very good shows.
So, Paul, why don't we kick things off this week and let you get your feet back under you by taking a stab at the front of the house. What do you got for us this week?
Well, there's four big things on my radar, actually three big things on my radar this week. The Dwyer Group, again, of course, is in the news, stepping up efforts to help veterans find business success. And as they continue to expand this family of service brands, the Dwyer Group is also stepping up their efforts with veterans. As Mike Bidwell said, we have grown substantially during the course of this year, and it's our goal to boost our vet brand efforts across all 11 of our service brands. And, of course, Mike served in Marines, and he's now the CEO and president of the Dwyer Group. You know, every year the Dwyer Group makes it a top priority to reach out through VetFran to help veterans succeed successfully into the, you know, basically integrate themselves into the workforce by giving them different opportunities across all their franchise brands. Mary Kennedy Thompson, now the COO of the Dwyer Group, said the program is leading efforts to educate military veterans about future career opportunities and help assimilate them back into civilian life after they leave the military. And to date, the VetFran program has helped more than 200,000 veterans start a career in franchising. These 600-plus veterans have become franchise owners. And this is very timely information ahead of next week's celebratory Veterans Day. And my hat goes out to all those serving our country or have served our country because you, my friend, give us the opportunity to enjoy the freedoms that we pretty much take for granted on a daily basis. Thank you for your service.
You know, Paul, to you, just as a little preview of something we'll talk about later when we get to the back of the house, but we're going to have Mike Stone on next week with us, my co-founder of the Pro Athlete Franchise Initiative, and we may just get into a little discussion next week about some programs that Mike and I are looking forward to presenting, which might help pro athletes and veterans find a way to collectively help each other advance their cause in business ownership through franchising. Just a little tease.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent. There was a great article the other day in the Houston Business Journal. I think it was actually populated out through all the business journals. The headline was How Today's Unemployed, Underemployed, or Unsatisfied Employees Become Tomorrow's Business Owners. In particular, what I really liked about it was their focus on franchising. And it said, franchising is one of the few sectors of the economy that experienced an almost complete bounce back after 2010, just after the Great Recession crippled virtually every industry under the sun. Today, it's flourishing. Franchises employ 8.8 million in nearly 800,000 businesses across the nation, according to data by the International Franchise Association. And that data estimates franchises will generate $520 billion for the U.S. this year, up from $496 billion in 2015. And, of course, in the great state of Texas, things are looking even better. In May, Governor Greg Abbott signed legislation that slashed the state's business franchise tax by 25%. And job cuts and uncertainty throughout Houston are leaving many business people jobless while this is going on, but sitting on a pile of capital and a wealth of business experience. And the article goes on with some great information and great anecdotes from different franchise organizations. But there's a graphic there that's a very interesting, Stan, and it talks about U.S. franchises by output. And full-service restaurants and quick-service restaurants are only making up a third of all franchise output throughout the country, with business services pretty much coming close to rivaling quick-service restaurants. So we're seeing more and more on the non-food service side.
I think there's probably a good reason for that if you think about it, Paul. I mean, some of those business services don't require the brick and mortar and heavy investment
Absolutely.
That are required
mm-hmm.
for those restaurant concepts that are much bigger and more expensive footprints with high rent factors and expensive equipment as part of the mix. So I guess there's some logic to that, and it makes good sense. And in fact, when you give it a little bit of thought.
Yeah, I think, and also any type of mix is good. Don't like to see a lot of it in one, because then when there's one industry segment that's weighing heavy, then all attention is on that one part of it. And laws are made specifically for that one part of it. Changes are made specifically for one part of it. But as it's equaling out, I think it's going to be better for franchising in the long term.
Well, I think you're right. If we can just keep government and SEIU and NLRB away from everybody, it'll all be good.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this month, in a proclamation from President Obama, is National Entrepreneurship Month, with November 17th being proclaimed as National Entrepreneur Day. And ironically, the day after, we have one of the IFA Entrepreneur of the Year winners that will be on Franchise Today on the 18th, which will be Shelley Sun, the founder of Brightstar. But in the proclamation, opens up with a very strong paragraph. Since our nation's founding, our progress has been fueled by an inherent sense of purpose and ingenuity in our people. Americans have more opportunities now than ever before to carry forward this legacy, to create something, to raise capital in creative ways, and to pursue aspirations. During National Entrepreneurship Month, we revisit our roots as a country of dreamers and doers, and we celebrate and support the next generation of American entrepreneurs. And Stan, what a great segue into the conversation with today's guest, Jennifer Cashel. She's the founder and CEO of Young and Successful Media and YSN.com, and she joins us today to discuss the cause of economic empowerment of young among young adults and entrepreneurs, and how franchising contributes to the same. And the competitive program tied to franchising is Next Gen, a new generation of franchising, of which Jennifer is a driving force, working hand-in-hand with the International Franchise Association in this, the second year of the global competition. Jennifer, welcome to Franchise Today.
I'm so glad to be here with both of you. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Let me piggyback on that as well, Paul and Jennifer. For as long as I've known you, I marvel at what you accomplish and how you do it, not just in the confines of here at home, but taking the message of entrepreneurship for young entrepreneurs across the pond and around the world globally. And as somebody who has spent a great many years in my career focused on diversity, I don't know anybody who lives it and breathes it and puts it into practice on a daily basis as well and efficiently as you do, making the business case for diversity and doing so focusing predominantly on the next generation of future franchisees and franchisors. Welcome.
Wow. Wow. Thank you, Stan. That's tremendous. What you said about pushing the business case forward, that's everything I've dedicated my life to, because, you know, as you see the president making proclamations about entrepreneurship and the next generation, this is something we've been fighting for literally 20 years now. I just found a newsletter we did in 1997 that was calling itself the first magazine for young entrepreneurs. And that was 97, and no one was talking about young entrepreneurs, and no one was talking about next gen. And so it's so exciting to be able to have the opportunity to see that being celebrated not only in our country, but in markets all over the world, in countries we don't even think about in America sometimes, but have these burgeoning entrepreneurial ecosystems that are growing, and entrepreneurship week and day coming up. That's the most beautiful manifestation of it, where thousands of locations in cities everywhere are celebrating entrepreneurship now and the power of the next generation.
Absolutely.
You know,
go ahead, Stan.
I was going to just say I'm anxious for you to be able to share with the audience in our time today some of Next Gen and what inspired it all. But, you know, before we even go there, and Paul, I might be cutting a bit in front of you, but I'm curious, Jennifer, if you could just spend a few minutes talking about you yourself as an example of next-gen in franchising, as you come from an iconic franchise family, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I've been in franchising since before I even knew what it was. Let's put it that way. As a lot of families do in franchising, you know, they go to the big convention and they bring their wives and their husbands and their kids. And I was one of those kids who was sitting at the pool while my dad was in sessions, and my uncle and my cousin were in sessions. And it wasn't until I was 15 at the Fontainebleau Hilton one year, I was reading Seven Habits of Highly Successful People or Highly Effective People, and wound up meeting Zenda and Frank Carney, who started Pizza Hut. And when Zenda told me that Frank was only a few years older than me, my entire life shifted. And I started going to all the sessions and listening to all the stories. And at that moment, I decided I wanted to do bigger things with my life.
So just to backfill a little bit, talk about who your dad is and who some of the relatives that you proudly carry the Cushell name into a new generation. Who came before you?
Yeah, I'm very grateful to be the daughter of Edward Cushell, who is a past chairman of IFA. He was very instrumental in, the early days of IFA with Bill Rosenberg and some of the early founders. And also, I believe he spearheaded a lot of the growth of franchising in Japan. I remember going over there and meeting some families there during that time. But then my uncle, Bob Cushell, is another one of the early people at IFA. And then Doug Cushell, of course, is still going strong as one of the top recruiters in the franchise industry with Franchise Search.
Awesome. What a background.
Truly remarkable. And you know, I was pleasantly surprised to learn more about you in preparation for the show, about some of the things that you've done, and specifically your bestseller book that you co-authored, which was, of course, is the title of today's show, The Secrets of the Young and Successful. But as I was typing that out, preparing for the show and creating all the promo, I inadvertently typed in Secrets of the Young and Restless.
And I thought, how appropriate, because today's young generation are a bit restless, underemployed, unemployed in many factors, but so entrepreneurial. And I've mentioned this before on the show, and I want to mention it again because I don't know if I've ever mentioned it to you, Jennifer. When Steve Jobs passed away, Steve Wozniak, his co-founder at Apple, was asked, will there ever be another Steve Jobs? And I'm going to paraphrase what he said. And he thought, and he said, you know, before now, I would have said, no, there'll never be another Steve Jobs. He said, but we have so many unemployed and underemployed young people, very talented, very smart, very creative, very entrepreneurial young people, that not only will I think there'll be another Steve Jobs, but there'll be many more Steve Jobs and many more Bill Gates and so on. And I think that just resonates loudly with everything that you're trying to do with the Next Gen Franchising Program.
Paul, you couldn't be more right on. You know, young people are restless because they don't feel like they're being listened to. They don't feel like there are opportunities for them. They don't see the relevance in how things are being done. And realize this is very new, that the world is acknowledging young people and recognizing that they're capable of doing great things, including owning a business, including owning or starting a franchise. This has not been a conversation for a long time. It's brand new. And there are still naysayers, even in the franchise industry, who say, oh, young people aren't ready to own a franchise. But we are seeing multi-unit owners who are in their teens. We're seeing people who are building chains in their 20s and 30s who are very significant. And that's one of the beautiful things about the Next Gen and Franchising campaign, that it's giving a platform for these people to come out. I love this topic. I wish we could talk for days on this, but I know we can't.
I'm sure we could talk for days on it. You know, Stan and I both had – go ahead.
No, I don't want to interrupt.
I was just going to say, Stan and I, you know, both had – the pleasure and the honor of being, you know, rooted into the program this year, especially because both of us spent a significant amount of time with Alexander Wackel, one of the winners from the Next Gen program. And as much as I was tuned into the program and as much as I supported the program, the hours that I spent with him took me to a new level, and I'm sure Stan feels the same. I mean, I was sitting across the table from a light bulb that was burning so bright and wanted to get brighter and brighter. And there wasn't anything that he didn't want to talk about. There wasn't anything on the table, first of all, that he wouldn't try and ate every single thing in sight. But it was just, it's just this passion for life that they bring to the table that, I mean, just inspires me. It inspires me beyond belief. And I know, Stan, you spent time with Alex as well. Maybe share some of your thoughts as well.
You know, I was impressed as could be with Alex, Paul, but, you know, I had some pre-education to set the stage for me even long before Alex and ever meeting Jennifer and seeing what she's been doing, taking this to a whole new place. You know, I've had the privilege for 10 years of being around DECA and thinking that the young gentleman who was the first Don DeBolt IFA Scholarship Award winner, a young man named Doug Quimby, when I first met Doug back in my Wing Zone days, I thought that Doug was a standalone, kind of like we see Alex. I thought he was so unique and so different than those kids his age that I'd be around, which were my son's friends, who, like my son, you know, give him his two thumbs and an iPhone or two thumbs and an Xbox, and, you know, he's in heaven. Yet guys like Quimby and Alex Wozel, same age, but in a different place. And again, I thought they were different or unique, but through DECA, I learned that there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of young entrepreneurial people, young people who have it in their DNA, who can, with the help of programs like Jennifer's Next Gen, be given a path to bring that forward and become commercially viable in business without ever being dependent upon a paycheck or government help or assistance. whole different world, and there's a lot out there waiting to be just helped along with programs like Jen's.
Stan, I'm so happy that you brought that up because, you know, I did want to go take a step at a higher level for a second and just set the stage. You know, you started the program by talking about the scope of the franchise industry and the impact of the franchise industry. If you want to look at the scope of young people and young entrepreneurs, we have to go to the bigger global picture and look at the fact that there are 1 billion young people entering the global workforce. At YSN, we're estimating there are at least 50 million young leaders and entrepreneurs out there that are eager and hungry, just like Alex, to do something. So when we talk about there being, no jobs, we talk about there not being enough talent, it's just not true. Because when we see this picture, where all these people are looking at it from very, very narrow perspectives, we're looking at it from the global perspective and saying the world is an absolute candy store of opportunity. And for companies that need to engage with the younger generation, for industries just like the franchise industry that need to engage with the younger generation, the opportunities are plentiful. They're everywhere. But you need people who can see it from the bigger perspective to kind of weave it together, to stack the bricks the right way and lay the grouting so that they build sustainability. And that's what NextGen's all about.
You know, when I hear people say that there aren't enough jobs, that's like saying once upon a time the sky was the limit. Well, the sky's not the limit anymore, is it? We've been to the moon and we're going beyond. And when people say there aren't enough jobs, then why don't we then help inspire young people to create some more jobs by becoming owners of businesses?
Well, that's also a lot of what we're doing, you know, as an organization. We're actually starting to even build curriculum for schools that are going out around the world. We're doing training programs and boot camps for embassies and for major, you know, nonprofits. And I've been speaking at the UN about this. We're trying to really raise hell about this lack of career counseling and career guidance that's being given to young people, because you have a very hungry audience that are so eager to engage in the world, to add value, to build organizations. But in most places, they don't have the access to training and development that's critical, let alone even the belief systems and the environments that are supportive of them and believing that a young person can really accomplish anything. So that's why these initiatives globally, Entrepreneurship Week, is so powerful, because it's that opportunity for a young person to see something happening, to see possibility and hope and build self-efficacy, which makes them infinitely more successful. And when they engage in a program like NextGen or in the Global Entrepreneur, you know, Summits or DECA or USASB or any programs like this, they become advocates. They realize what's possible and they keep going. And so everything I'm trying to do even with YSN is make sure that we pull all these programs together. We talk about them. We let millions of young people know what's out there for them so they can feel hopeful and pursue their entrepreneurial passions and connect with the industries that are so eager to connect with them.
So how do we get these young kids around the world to learn about programs like NextGen, and probably more to the core of the audience to this program, how do we help franchisors learn more about what NextGen does and how they can throw their lines into those waters that will help them become participatory in programs that can help uncover new and untapped hidden markets by creating a new generation of franchisees?
It's a great question. You know, the way we've been attacking it over the past few years as an organization is helping industries build campaigns specific to building bridges to the next generation around what's important to them. But franchising is one industry out of hundreds, maybe thousands, that are having a trouble connecting to the next generation. The oil and gas industry, they have 1 million jobs to fill in the next few years, and they can't connect with the new generation. So one of the things that we're looking at as an organization is actually building a news media platform to connect with 1 million-plus young people on a daily, weekly basis so that we can sculpt these messages for industries and organizations and help connect the dots, help even the nonprofits that have these unbelievable groups of young leaders, tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands, even millions of alumni, help them connect with all the new opportunity in the world, the new events, the scholarships, the programs, the competitions like NextGen, and the industries like the franchise industry that are a goldmine of opportunity and career advancement if they even knew it existed or if they had that first taste and could see what's possible.
You know, like with anything else, it requires a village, a large village, to make things happen. and a lot of support. And David McKinnon, co-founder of Service Brands International, pledged a significant endowment to the IFA Educational Foundation, which will be used to bolster the coffers of the IFA's next-gen and franchising program. That's got to be just a tremendous bit of gratitude on your part, but also a lot of relief for you to be able to focus on the things that need to happen and not have to worry as much about the raising of capital. Is that true?
I can't even tell you. I wanted to cry when I heard the news. David McKinnon, I'll never forget the first moment I met him at the NextGen Summit last year, and his eyes were just lit up. He had really literally like snuck into the room. He wasn't even supposed to be participating, and he heard about it. Meg Roberts said, go check it out. And he sat in on the round tables and started talking to these young people. And literally within minutes, within an hour, he said, I need to be involved in a very significant way. And, you know, the conversations continued, and he stepped up in such a significant way to support NextGen. I can't even tell you how transformative that's been for this program and how it's really given us the fuel to keep pushing and keep looking at ways to grow the program. And also these young people, to have them see someone like him and his family step up, who have been such powerful entrepreneurs, built multiple companies, and really experienced the American dream and the franchise dream to its fullest. To see him turn around and say, I believe in you as the next generation, and I'm going to help you grow, that's just, what else could you ever ask for, ever? I mean, I hope he's an example to all of us to continue to see what else we can do and step up where we can to add value.
David McKinnon's been doing that for people for years, and there's no signs of him letting up anytime soon. This is Franchise Today, coming to you today, live and direct from both Atlanta, Georgia, and Houston, Texas, as we're speaking with Jennifer Cashel, the CEO and founder of Your Success Now, and the creator of the Next Gen Initiative for IFA. And somebody who has a very clear, concise focus on helping the world's next generation of franchisees globally discover their opportunities and those opportunities that are available to create jobs and build wealth through franchising. Jen, I was overwhelmed at the IFA convention almost a year ago at how many people were standing room only at the back of that room learning about Next Gen. What's on tap for this year at IFA?
Oh, we have a very exciting program. We're working really closely with John Reynolds and the team at the Education Foundation, who's responsible for all of this, to build that summit out and take it to the next level. And one of the new additions this year, which I'm so thrilled about, thanks to Tony Valley, who's CEO of College Pro, Tony and his team, who are absolute experts at training young people to learn about franchising and learn about the opportunities in it, he's helping to architect an accelerator program for our winners this year. So our 20 winners are going to have the opportunity to be trained and mentored by some of the biggest leaders in the franchise industry and really go through and be coached in how to build their businesses and how to take it to the next level, which is really extraordinary. And so David's been reaching out to some of the biggest leaders in the franchise industry and asking to get them involved as coaches, as mentors, as advisors. We're going to be pairing up our winners with ambassadors who are going to help them kind of navigate the convention this year, because it's a big deal. I mean, we literally had one kid from Malawi. I shouldn't call him a kid, a young man who with an MBA, who literally walked 17 miles to the airport in Malawi to get to Vegas last year and showed up. And to hear a story like that, it was just amazing. So we want to make sure that when these young people show up, whether they're coming from London or New York City or Chicago or Texas or Malawi or, Uganda, that they get a really beautiful reception at NextGen, and that we really look at their business opportunities critically and help them get to the next stage. Because one of the other things that we're seeing here is that the next generation, they're trying to build a new generation of franchise companies also. And that's really exciting. We're seeing a tremendous amount of interest in social franchises that are doing things for the world, which is a trend we've been seeing in youth entrepreneurship for years now. So I think that's one of really interesting and fascinating area for the franchise world to be thinking about too, because young people want to do good, but they also want to do well.
And doing well by doing good is what it's all about, isn't it? Jen, we had a problem last year in trying to get visas approved, and I know I tried to connect you with some friends of mine in Washington at last minute to try to get some of these aspiring entrepreneurs over here with visas and passports. We were on that earlier this year so that we've cleared the path and don't get bogged down in any of that kind of tactical blocking this year?
Well, let me just say, Stan, I can't even begin to thank you enough for the help that you gave us, connecting us to the highest levels of government, trying to clear visas for some of these kids. We are getting incredible interest from all over the world, especially Africa, believe it or not. And in a lot of cases, these kids have never traveled before, or they've never come to a big business conference. So there are challenges in securing visas for some of them. We've just closed the competition last Friday, and so we're going through and filtering through who the finalists are right this minute. So I promise you, as soon as that list is confirmed, which will be this week, next week, we will start looking at that visa process immediately and trying to make sure that we can get them over, you know, when they really are so, so deserving. But also trying, you know, one thing that I've been really trying to do is connect the IFA initiatives and a lot of the international initiatives with what's happening with the global entrepreneur initiatives from the government side, because there's tremendous opportunity for collaboration and overlap, which would literally make franchise opportunities get them on the radar for millions and millions of young people.
Jennifer, you travel a tremendous amount of time and miles. I think I read somewhere over 2 million miles to date.
Yep.
When you're standing in front of these young entrepreneurs and they're listening to you talk and discuss, you know, entrepreneurship, help us visualize, you know, their faces at this point.
I love that question. When I was in El Salvador a couple of years ago, if you had filmed it and turned off the volume, you would have thought you were standing at a USC event in downtown Los Angeles. The students were so beautifully dressed, so incredibly articulate, well-spoken, well-packaged, and eager. When you go to, where else, Malaysia. I went to Malaysia with the Global Entrepreneur Summit. There were young people flown in from 100 countries to do a two-day hackathon to build apps to change the world. Talk about finding the next Bill Gates or Steve Jobs. That program exactly was about that. So 100 countries worth of young people there. You see the faces and the languages are different, and some of the terminology they use are different. But what's completely universal, regardless of where you go, is the hunger to engage. And oftentimes, they're even hungrier in emerging markets. They're even hungrier outside of the United States. We and our kids sometimes take for granted the fact that there's opportunity everywhere. But internationally, it's not always that case. So they want to engage so desperately. I was supposed to go to Pakistan last month, and unfortunately, I couldn't go at the last minute. They didn't have all the funding. But I got to do a Skype call at 3 o'clock in the morning and speak to the conference. And even in hijabs and niqabs, which is, you know, completely covered with just the eyes, you could see the love. You could see the smiles, even through the covering, and how eager they were to hear about how to engage in business around the world. So, yes, I've traveled to 50 countries now. I hope to go to 100. I hope I still get the opportunity to do it. But the more I do it, the more I can come back and tell these stories and show that everywhere I go, Albania, Algeria, everywhere, these kids are hungry. They want to engage. They are curious about franchising. And I think to all the franchise companies that are bold enough to go international right now and look at these emerging markets, there are tremendous opportunities to engage with young people. And they will help fly the flag and grow those brands in their own markets, because it's such an opportunity for them.
One question that I had, because obviously there is a lot of opportunity. But what about funding? You know, it always comes back to funding. And how accessible is funding for these young entrepreneurs and will be for these young entrepreneurs, in your opinion?
You know, I've got to say funding is always the challenge, but it's not just always for the young entrepreneurs. It's for the ecosystem as a whole. Even people like me, look at the amount of work that we do. Look at the amount of impact that we make. We're always stuck with limited funding. It's very hard to get the support to do these big initiatives. And oftentimes, frankly, I'm flying myself around the world oftentimes because a lot of these organizations can't afford to fly someone from the United States. But I'll do it. And even though I'm not a multimillionaire, I will still do it because I know that makes a difference. And I know I can come home and talk on the global stage about that. So funding needs to happen not just for these young entrepreneurs, but especially for the service providers and the people running the ecosystems, because they're doing the training and development of the young people. Oftentimes we build these business plan competitions and we say, oh, just give us an idea and we'll give you some scholarship money. Well, we haven't cultivated that idea. And we're not taking the time to find the people who are dedicated for years and years and years to building these businesses. Most young people will work at least 8 or 10 months or 12 months on a concept before they even announce it to anyone. So I think training and development can't be underestimated. Advocacy can't be underestimated. We've got to tell them it's possible, show them how to do it, fuel the people in the communities that are training them and teaching them, and then make sure that seed capital is available. And at the higher levels, make sure that the entire funding spectrum is filled in. And this is very dramatically different depending on what market you're in. In Cairo, I was in Nairobi for the last Entrepreneurship Summit, which is Kenya, and I went to dinner with a bunch of friends from Egypt. And they're literally running the entrepreneurial ecosystem in Egypt. And they said, we can fund all these entrepreneurs up to the $2 million level, but we have a handful of them that are ready to grow, and we can't find the funding sources for them. So it's really the ecosystem we have to look at. If any company or philanthropists or individuals want to get involved funding this field, look at the ecosystem, not just the individual players. Because the connective tissue is what is transformative. It's not just the individual events and the individual donations. It's looking at the overall ecosystem and connecting the dots.
Paul, it's no surprise that you're jumping in front of me there with exactly the question I was going to, which is which is really what the next logical thought in my mind was. You know, the Mark Cubans of the world, the Rourke Capitals, the private equity, those incubators that are looking to provide service to and to benefit from the next level of entrepreneurs. Again, I think back to my early days in real estate franchising. I didn't work for the largest real estate franchise brokerage in the world, but I worked for the smartest one, because while the big giants like Remax and Century 21 were much bigger than ERA. ERA had a marketing line that uncovered an untapped market for prospective clients. It was, if we don't sell your house, we'll buy it. Well,
wow.
all those for sale by owner people who weren't going to list with anybody, we got phone calls from them because we were a non-threatening engagement. If we don't sell it, we'll buy it. I feel like your program has some of the same kind of teeth that marketing program had, because you're not just looking for what's already out there. You're looking to create the next generation of opportunity, and the seed capital and the incubators and all those who can benefit from this next generation of opportunity that will be created by this program, those are the guys that I think we should find a way to be talking with and help them share the vision of what this initiative is all about. And at this juncture too, Jen, I think I'd be remiss as we're speaking about capital and funding if I didn't remind the audience that Franchise Today is brought to you by FRM Solutions, robust out-of-the-box software provided specifically for the needs of franchisors in managing potential and existing franchise relationships, and of course the Franchise Foundry, a business accelerator focused on moving emerging franchise brands forward. Maybe the Foundry ought to be your sponsor, Paul. It sounds like those seeds that you're planting are the same as Jen's.
I would love nothing better, as I am growing a Foundry. So I am trying to do everything that I can possible in promoting everything that Jennifer's doing in the Next Gen program. It's, you know, I just launched after a year planning, and you might have seen some of this. I know Jennifer has a new program called Entrepreneurship and You. And we launched our Facebook page. We have our website ready, almost ready to launch, blog. There's going to be a podcast, Entrepreneurship and You. What was interesting when I first put it out on Facebook and did a little bit of Facebook marketing to just try to prime the pump, when I went back and I looked at all the likes on the page, and there were hundreds, over 80% of them looked by looking at their picture to be right in the category we're talking about, you know, probably somewhere between the age of 20 and 30, 32 years old. So to that end, it leads to my question, Jennifer. We talk about, you know, globally. Let's kind of just bring it back into the United States. How much of an issue is there about young entrepreneurs or young people in the United States and entrepreneurship and not having the opportunities? I mean, we know we could only imagine what goes on in the global markets. But here, where we have so many freedoms and we have so many liberties and we have so many opportunities, we still have similar problems, because I know the unemployment rate or underemployed rate of our young generation is quite high. What's your take on it here in America?
You know, I don't think, you know, when I hear the concept of not having enough opportunities, I immediately think it's not necessarily true. It's not a matter of not having the opportunities. It's not being trained in opportunity awareness, opportunity recognition. We have a training problem more than we have a lack of opportunity problem. Young people are not being taught, even in America, to look at what's out there for them. And I deal with the entire spectrum, from very poor, literally scraped off the streets into government programs, all the way to Harvard, and some, you know, work with billionaire kids sometimes. And when you're dealing at a very high level where people are in very economically comfortable scenarios, oftentimes they have so much opportunity that they're overwhelmed. And they don't make moves because they're scared, or there are so many expectations on them about what they should be doing that they forget about what they want and they don't get in alignment. That's why a lot of CEOs send their kids to me, you know, and say, please help them, because they're stymied. So it's not that there's no opportunity. Opportunity is everywhere. It's all around us. But breaking out and following what's true to you is really, really important as a step. On the poor kids side, they don't feel like they have opportunity, but sometimes it's just a few blocks beyond their immediate environment. And so, again, a lot of it is the education and the awareness for the young people to see what's happening around them and what's available to them. It's not a lack of opportunity. Opportunity is everywhere. And also, as entrepreneurs, we all know that. We're trained as entrepreneurs to find challenges in society and address them, attack them with economically stable, you know, economic ventures.
I love that. I love that position. You know, going back about 6-7 years ago, I had the opportunity, I'll call it an opportunity. I helped out a client that was in a bad situation with a sports bar that he got involved in, and I wound up getting involved. But I had a lot of younger people ask me, you know, between the age of 21 and 30, ask me, you know, what I did for, you know, a living, how I got where I was. And all of a sudden the conversation started going towards entrepreneurship. Yep. And I offered to meet with them, and it was a small group, and I brought in some books that I had, and we met Wednesdays at 5 o'clock for an hour. And over the next 8 or 9 months, that grew to Wednesdays from 4 to 7 o'clock and tapped out at 48 people. And just like you said about the parents not knowing what to do with their kids and turning them over to you, one Thursday morning after a great session the night before with these young kids, I get a phone call, and I happened to answer the phone at the sports bar. And he said, "Are you Paul Segretto?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I don't know what the heck you're doing up there." And I thought, oh, my God, you know, some kid came home drunk, you know, drugs, you're thinking the worst. And I said, what are you referring to? Very hesitantly. And he said, I've been trying to get my kid to go back to school. And for something that you're doing up there, he went ahead and enrolled, and I want to thank you. And I thought, I still get chills.
Fantastic.
I like that. And I'd say I probably have 15 or 18 of them that still connect with me on social media. Many of them have gone into business for themselves, and it makes me a proud, I'm even stumbling over words on this. It makes me a very proud pop because I look at them as my kids.
I got to pay you back.
How many kids you have now with all this? Go ahead, Stan.
You know, just to piggyback on what you've both just said, I think it was probably in 2011 or thereabout, just before I joined FRM, doing some work with Tutor Doctor, I got to spend 2 trips to Cornell University to speak on franchising, one to the graduate school at Johnson School and another at the Dyson undergrad school. And, you know, this was really on the aftermath of the reset button getting hit in 08, and the country was still bleeding jobs. And, you know, I'm sure none of these kids at Cornell were sent there to think about franchising as the career path that they were going to embark upon after graduation. But to the point you made, Jennifer, some of these kids that are privileged don't even give themselves permission to think about the path that their careers can go and how they can take the education that they were so fortunate enough to have at a place like Cornell and bring it to business ownership. And on the other side of the spectrum, to those that are less privileged, they don't think we're talking to them when we say own your business, own your life. They
exactly.
They don't think it's within their purview. They don't think the message can possibly be directed toward them. And it's incumbent upon us to help them realize that you don't need $1 million to start every franchise. You need to start your first franchise and go to work on your first million. Isn't that more of the message?
Yes, so true. And also showing people a pathway. They want to see pathways. I would hope every franchise company out there that employs young people at some level in their company would show them the pathways. I can't tell you how many inner city kids I have that I work with that work minimum wage jobs in businesses that have never been talked to about management opportunities, that have never been talked to about ownership opportunities, that couldn't even tell you who owns their company or how their company was started. That's an extraordinarily easy opportunity to capitalize on. When you talk about 8 million people employed by the franchise industry, I would implore every franchisor to look at their messaging within their own companies and their own communities and tell the stories of their startups, tell the story of how they impact their community, and tell their own employees about the upward mobility opportunities. That's an amazing opportunity that we could ignite that would impact millions and millions of lives.
Well said.
Yeah, very well said. It's interesting you said that. For one of the brands we were working with, we rolled out, it was a couple of years ago, we rolled out a major digital initiative. And, of course, that's right in the breadbasket of many of the, most of the young people today. And I did some mystery shopping and showed up at one of the locations. And there was a, you know, 20-year-old, working behind the counter because it was a children's brand and they had a lot of 20-somethings working there. And I just acted as if I was looking to book a birthday party for one of my grandchildren. And I asked him some questions and he went through some good answers. I could tell that he was on top of his game and was definitely focused on customer service. And I said, are there any coupons or anything like that, any discounts I might be able to find on something like, you know, Facebook? And the young gentleman said, Facebook? We haven't even ventured into Facebook. Now, to your point, here's somebody that has a passion for that, absolutely had a passion for that. The organization spent a lot of money putting through a digital initiative that was around Facebook and neglected to let their employees know about it.
It happens all the time.
What a missed opportunity.
Happens all the time. Connective tissue is everything in youth engagement. I say it all the time, and very few people really hear it. connective tissue. We have to permeate our messaging all across the board. And everyone in marketing understands that. You need multiple, and Stan, you know this. I mean, you've been unbelievable in building companies over all these years. You have to make multiple points of contact in multiple formats and multiple contexts to really get your messaging through and engage people. And that's true when we're selling franchises, when we're hiring people, and when we're engaging a new generation in an industry and an ideology that they're unfamiliar with.
Tremendous information. As we move towards the top of the hour, Jennifer, I do want to thank you for being our guest today. Are there any last words you'd like to leave with our audience?
I would just say, everyone, please keep in touch with NextGen. If you, we're going to be announcing our finalists soon. Check out NextGen and franchise, nextgenfranchising.org for all the information about the initiative. Reach out to us if you want to get engaged in any way, if you want to support the program, get involved in the program. If you have young people or you are a young person who wants to be on the list for next year, we'll, you know, keep you in touch. You can reach us at ifa@ysn.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at ysnjen. And one last thing I'd just love to mention, because this topic of opportunity recognition has become so big, not just in the United States, but also globally, we're going to do a webinar soon, like an hour-long webinar about expanding your world of opportunity. And every time I've talked about this recently in speaking engagements, I get mobbed by hundreds of people. So we're going to do that soon. So keep an eye out for that. But I really think this concept of expanding our world of opportunity, whether we're a franchisor, franchisee, employee, or just a supportive, you know, other. We really need to look at this and look at it on a global level, too.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate you being here today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jennifer.
You know, Stan, before we move towards the back of the house, which I know you have some things to talk about, I did want to say one parting comment or statement about NextGen Franchising. You know, the initiative has received donations from, you know, major corporations, foundations, and individuals, including the Stuart and Jane Bynum Fund, Stephen P. Joyce Fund, Choice Hotels Foundation, Jay Willard and Alice S. Marriott Foundation, Tariq Fareed Edible Arrangements, Charlie Chase First Service Brands, Inc., Aziz Hashim, NRD Holdings, Ahmet Kleinberger, Menchie's Frozen Yogurt, Joe Boudreaux, Valpak, Melanie Bergeron, Two Men in a Truck, Amit from Metro Frank Connect, and Lawrence Doc Cohen of Doc and Associates. I applaud all of you. What a tremendous commitment to something that is so, so, so very much needed.
Absolutely, Paul. And I ditto all of that. Could not agree with you more. So what do you say we wrap it up with some looks ahead here to the week or two in front of us?
Take it away.
Well, next week's a very busy week in the world of franchising with both the Restaurant Finance Conference in Las Vegas on the front end of the week, and then the back of the week I'll be heading out to Anaheim for the West Coast Franchise Expo, where FRM proudly is a platinum sponsor of the West Coast Expo along with the other MFV expos nationwide. Looking forward to seeing everybody in Anaheim. And on the heels of Anaheim, not weeks but days later, it's down to Miami for the IFA's Emerging Franchise Conference coming up the following week. So it's a pretty busy roll up to the Thanksgiving holiday, but what a great time to be in a great business of franchising. And Paul, next week I'm thrilled to have Michael Stone joining us for the guest portion of our program, and we're going to be talking about the evolution and revolution of the PAFI Pro Athlete Franchise Initiative that Mike and I started together some 6 or 7 years ago, and the visions we've got for not just helping athletes find their way into franchising, but maybe for some of those athletes that are more predisposed to passive rather than active engagement in the franchise world, how we may be able to find some linkage and lineage between returning veterans and pro athletes, and opportunities for both to benefit from franchise opportunities that may be appropriate for them and their respective roles to help each other once again do well by doing good. So we'll be talking about some of that and a whole lot more with Michael Stone next week on Franchise Today. Paul, tell us what's coming up in the weeks following.
So in the weeks following, after Michael, the week after, we have Shelley Sun will be returning for Franchise Today. And I might add, this will be Michael's second guest appearance on Franchise Today. He was my guest. God, I think it's going back 4-plus years ago. And Shelley...
Well, he got here sooner than me.
Yeah. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And Shelley will be returning as our guest. And I'm really looking forward to some of her perspective and insight on the NLRB ruling, which I know her and Catherine Monson and others have been very actively following and engaged with. And a matter of fact, to that end, Catherine will be our guest on the show. I think it's December 18th, and we're still filling in for the two prior weeks or earlier weeks in December. But the day before Thanksgiving, we will not be broadcasting live that day, but we will have a replay of one of our shows, and we'll look for the most listened to show to date at that point. So, I mean, I can't believe, Stan, we worked so hard getting Franchise Today relaunched. I thank you for that. I thank you for the push in that direction. And now we're already, you know, closing in on the end of the year. And, of course, January will be the seven-year anniversary of Franchise Today on the air. And hundreds of shows and hundreds of thousands of listeners, both live and on demand on iTunes. And I see it just continuing to increase. And I thank you for your involvement in that.
Happy to be part of it, Paul. And for the last 2 weeks, I've had to sit in for you with the closing line to bring the week's podcast to conclusion. So this week, I'm going to ask you to take the gavel again and bring this to closure.
Thanks, Dan. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best in this great, great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.